The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The vice presidential debate on Monday night in New York was the most anticipated event of the election week as we moved into the final month of campaigning. But it was also the week when Special Prosecutor Jack Smith's newly revealed evidence about Donald Trump's attempt to steal the election was put into public domain by a federal judge. So much to talk about with my next guest, who's a 30-year veteran of U.S. diplomacy and a former U.S. ambassador, Gina Abercrombie-Winstanley. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
Before we talk about the Middle East and what might happen next or what might happen in the end, let's look at domestic politics, because this conflict is bound to feed into the campaigns as we go towards November. What did you make of the vice presidential set piece?
Well, it followed the usual debates. I believe that both campaigns were satisfied that no harm was done. Tim Walz certainly told us all that he was not an experienced debater before he went in, and that was apparent. But he got over his nerves and I think made the case of what the differences are between the two candidates. J.D. Vance, on the other hand, had a low bar to meet. He had to seem a reasonable, calm, polite human being, quite frankly, because he's done so poorly on the campaign trail. And I think most of us would agree that he accomplished that. Nonetheless, on the substance, the issues, I think Mr. Walz came out far more strongly and reassured those who were thinking about which one of these candidates to take a chance on. Not the vice president, but as we noted, both candidates spent their time talking about the top of the ticket.
Now, the damage limitation that J.D. Vance is faced with now is that one question which he dodged several times, which was January the 6th. And was Donald Trump rightfully or not rightfully defeated by Joe Biden? How much damage did that inflict?
Oh, I think that, and I think they put out a commercial, the Harris campaign, almost immediately after, showing exactly that moment when he was searching for an answer that could somehow cobble together staying in the good graces of Donald Trump and having some truth to it, and he could not do it. I think deeply damaging. One of the reasons that Donald Trump lagged certainly was not leaps and bounds ahead of President Biden is because of January 6th, because the American people are concerned about our own democracy. And then with the October surprise of Jack Smith releasing the contents of his case against President Trump, that answer weighs even more heavily.
How do you understand that decision by Jack Smith? And it was down to the federal prosecutor, or the federal judge at the end of the day, to decide whether or not the public should ever see the content. I mean, Jack Smith could not have predicted that decision. It's a 50-50 one, I know. But what was behind all of this?
Well, certainly Mr. Smith was not willing to give up his case in spite of the extraordinary decision by the Supreme Court about unlimited presidential immunity. I mean, that decision, frankly, has a lot of Americans deeply concerned and confused, because that's not what America stands for. We had a war to ensure that there would be accountability to our senior leaders. So Mr. Smith's cobbling the case together is to prepare for eventually a case before the Supreme Court to say that the former president was acting in a private manner, not as the president of the United States. Why it was released at this moment by that judge in particular is interesting and certainly important, because it gives the American people the opportunity to examine even more closely what's ahead of us again. We've been here. We generally know what our Donald Trump presidency will bring. Most of us have not forgotten, even those who I personally know who are supporting his presidency again, have not forgotten the chaos, have not forgotten the international embarrassment that he caused the United States with his utterings, with his relationships, with his vocalizing some of his decisions. So this 165 pages, I believe, will reseal what people know and possibly have an effect on the election. We say October is full of surprises. This is one of them.
Now, the question of the legal niceties of all of this, number one, it's been released within that period of 60 days, which some people will quarrel about, but that damage from Trump's point of view is already done. But the idea of trying to decide what acts that an incumbent does in an attempt to maintain power, how you can say that is not done by the incumbent, but rather by a private citizen who happens to be the president of the United States at that time. That's a thorny one for the legal eagles to dissect.
Well, you know, they love to dissect it. But my understanding, and I haven't read all of it yet, is that as you do read it, you will see that as decisions were being made, though in the White House, government officials were not in the room. And this is something that Mr. Smith has stressed and highlighted throughout these 165 pages. Campaign officials were in the room when these discussions and decisions were being made. And that is the crux. One, I understand from my lawyer friends, that is a credible case that he was acting as a candidate, which is not president, a candidate for the presidency, as opposed to acting in his presidential position. And that's the crux of the case. And there's some there, as my mother used to say.
Now, what could be done about a Supreme Court who literally gave Donald Trump the power if he had, for example, an argument as president with his Secretary of State, another government officer, and took out a pistol and shot his Secretary of State? That would not be prosecutable.
So what can be done about this court at this court is that this is the one that we've got. This is something that many Americans are keeping in mind as we vote. And it was something that the Republicans did far better in 2016 than the Democrats, which is to focus on the court, to remind their supporters what a presidency in their hands would mean for who gets nominated to the court. Well, I can assure you the rest of America has learned that lesson. So it will absolutely depend, because we do have several members on the court who will be replaced, of course, over the next 4 years. And who gets to be president is going to make a difference as to what type of person gets to the court. So now we've seen what Mr. Trump's appointees have accomplished or wrought, and we will know whether we want more of that. And that's going to make a difference in this election as well.
Now, we talk about the air war, in other words, the war that is waged on the airwaves, on television, to some extent on radio, and of course, on social media through the digital channels. And then there's the ground war, where you get the ordinary grunts, I suppose, of the campaigns getting out, knocking on doors, making phone calls. How activated are those grunts at the moment on either side?
Well, I haven't had anybody knock on my door from Mr. Trump's party, and certainly I have had people knock from Vice President Harris's party. In the end, all of this, they'll tell you it comes down to the ground game, exactly as you have described it. And I know for a fact that the Harris-Waltz campaign is ramping up their volunteers. So your people in America are going to see a whole lot of people over the weekends in particular, and in the evenings, neighbors knocking on doors. It's going to really ramp up. It's certainly been in place, and I'm currently in the state of Ohio, Mr. Vance's state. I know that volunteers for Democrats have been out there, and I know volunteers and paid people have been out for the Republicans as well. And this, I'm not sure if this is a plus for which side, in so fact And because the Democrats largely depend on volunteers, and the Republicans at times are able to pay for people to go out. So if you're getting paid, I suppose you want to make that money, you go out and do it. But there may be an enthusiasm gap because the Democrats are able to get volunteers to go out there and do it and talk to their neighbors.
Now, we turn to international events, and normally in any American political campaigns, foreign affairs don't loom large unless there's an unpopular war like Vietnam or the Gulf War 1 or 2 or Afghanistan. And then people are motivated for concern about Americans overseas and, of course, the war on terror. But do you suspect that Israel, Gaza, Lebanon, Iran is going to figure in this campaign?
It will figure in this campaign. We already know that the Democrats are struggling in some states like Michigan. Younger people have a very clear eye. I think one that is not colored by habit, by warm relationship, by nostalgia and the history of our ally in the Middle East, but who are able to see the power dynamics, the construct, and the what many are acknowledging gap in what the United States says it stands for with regard to values and ideals, and how our ally is conducting itself in this conflict. And there are young people who are saying we cannot support the president, and certainly now the Democratic candidate, the vice president, as U.S. policy continues to support an ally and conduct that is anathema to American law and international humanitarian law. So there is danger there. But the reality is, there is no one who is questioning whether to come out and vote in the presidential campaign to switch the votes to the Republican candidate. There's no one who thinks that's going to be better. And there is an opportunity for calibration, for moderating what we're doing and how we're doing it to better align with those dual challenges, which is to stand by an ally, but not relinquish what America itself is supposed to stand for.
There was an intriguing poll, and I've forgotten which state was involved, but it was looking at American Arabs, and the majority were pro-Trump. And I'm baffled by this because Trump is obviously a foursquare behind Netanyahu in all he does.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important to remember that while some Americans will be one-issue voters, most of us are not. For Democrats, there'll be many who will feel very strongly about human rights, about supporting an apartheid state, speaking quite honestly. I mean, not trying to sugarcoat this, that is the reality, and the United States is helping maintain those policies that Israel carries out that we disagree with, but also on reproductive rights, on the ability to keep the government out of your private life, which used to be a Republican stance and increasingly now is a Democrat stance. So people will be juggling these issues, the economy, inflation, infrastructure support, and who do you believe overall, the issues that are right in front of you. So I doubt that the majority of Arab Americans are pro-Trump, certainly not based on what the policies that he's likely to carry out in the Middle East, but they may have misunderstood the fact that Mr. Trump inherited a strong economy from Mr. Obama, and until he stumbled badly with COVID, and the economy was tanked. But then Mr. Biden came into office and retrieved that economy. There are certainly challenges with it, but I do tell young people, I'm old enough to have bought my first house at 13%. And of course, we have Americans complaining about 6%. mortgage cost, but I paid 13%, so 6 still looks pretty good to me. It's all relative and where you sit.
Sure. I can say me too about those high interest rates when I bought my first house. You mentioned earlier the chaotic nature of a Trump presidency, and you know, maybe we return to the chaos one way or the other. But if we don't, if there should be a Harris Waltz victory in this election in November, what do you see as the post-Trump era? I mean, he has sons, of course, and he has acolytes, but will the Republican Party revert in some way to its former type, or is Trumpism too far embedded now for it to change?
Oh, that is such an important question. I know there are many Republicans who hope that some aspect of reversion will take place, that you can be conservative in your views and your policies and not be nasty, not be rude, not be lacking in compassion, that there is a possibility to return to that. I think if it is possible, it is going to be a slow road, that Trumpism and his acolytes are sufficiently embedded in the party. And we have only to look to J.D. Vance. I mean, J.D. Vance, who appeared to be a man of character and honesty as you looked at what he wrote and said before the 2016 race, and yet it was so lacking in moral certitude and standing that he was able to align himself and now stand as Trump's vice president. You know, he says he changed his mind, but these are deep and abiding values and ideals that you don't just kick over, well, unless you are just looking for power and you see that this is the quickest road to it. And the challenge is that J.D. Vance is a much more attractive vessel for those sorts of policies.
It's extraordinary watching Jimmy Kimmel the other night when he was talking about the two vice presidential nominees and their debate. He said one described Donald Trump as reprehensible and unfit for office, and the other was Tim Walz.
Indeed. And that should make everyone question J.D. Vance. Everyone should question. So I know that we will see what happens in the election. I know that for my part, I'm hoping for a calm and clear decision. I would say one way or the other, but the reality is I care too much about my country and its future to say that. I'm hoping for a result, but we will see. The election is before us, and the American people have a clear decision as to what we want for our nation and the world. We've got a clear decision in front of us, and we'll see. We'll see what we do.
Yeah. And finally, that question, should the chaotic Trump return, do you think there will be any people around him who will moderate his behavior? I mean, there were people who tried to and then became disenchanted and have subsequently written about how bad it was. Will there be anyone around him who will stay his hand in his possible excesses?
That, sir, should have us all losing sleep if he does win election, because I believe the answer largely is no. No. When you have the vice president who is not the policymaker, but the last one in the room, and you see that that vice president was incapable of making clear to the American people that he stood for our Constitution and our democracy by saying what we know is fact, which is that that President Trump lost that election in 2020, that he was so terrified of the president's reaction, the former president's reaction, that he could not speak this truth and put the American people and our nation ahead of Donald Trump. That was Tim Walz saying. That is a clear non-answer there and shows who's going to come first in the last voice before the president makes his decision. So we all know that now. And I think that is going to be a telling reality in the election, but we will have to see. So the short answer is no. He will be unfettered, not by having to be reelected and not by having someone strong enough in the room to say, Mr. President, you are wrong. Mr. President, you cannot do that. They were in short supply the last time he was in office. They are missing entirely now. And we've seen 40 of his senior officials have said they would not serve with him again. People who know him say they would not serve with him again.
What a shocking prospect. Former U.S. Ambassador Gina Abercrombie Winstanley, thank you very much for giving us your time and your wisdom. It's a great pleasure having you on the program.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate the ability to share. Thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.